Okay, so if that's all our happy dollars, I'm going to go ahead and introduce our guest since Laura's out of town. She asked me if I would. Today's speaker is celebrating 61 years of playing music. He and his wife Barbie founded the Kentucky Opry in May of 1988. He's a distinguished Toastmaster. He's authored several books, and he helped start the Kentucky Lake Cowboy Church in 2010. So welcome, welcome, Clay Campbell.
Thank you. Who is passing out one of the brochures for the Opry?
Yeah.
So I really like wearing a hat because a few years ago, a good-looking woman come up and said, "You know, you look a lot like George Strait with that hat."
There you go.
And I said, "All my exes live in Texas." Hey, it's great to be here. It's thank you, Stephanie. Thank you, Boo. Thank you, Rotarians, Mayor. Honored guests here today. Thank you for being here. I have a set of notes, and I don't know if I'll get to all those, but I'm going to attempt the impossible today because I was asked to come here and talk about the Kentucky Opry and how the Kentucky Opry got started, and that's a four-hour speech, and I'm going to try to cram it in 30 minutes. Really quick. The first thing I could tell you about how the Kentucky Opry got started was how I started playing music. In 1964, I traded a saddle and a pig for a 1939 Martin guitar. And then my mom didn't like it because it smelled like whiskey and beer. I bought it from the guy who owned the local tavern. And I brought it home and she said, "That man has cheated you. Your saddle was a new saddle and a pig, and it's worth way more than that old stinky guitar." Well, if I had that guitar today, it'd be worth about $200,000. It was a pre-war Martin and a highly valuable guitar, except I didn't know it. So on the long list of foolish things I've done, that was early on, right there. That was one of the early foolish errors in judgment I made, getting rid of that guitar. I started a band a year or so later, got some guys together, and started playing music. And the first time that we got paid for playing music, I thought, hey, this beats throwing hay bales, working on the farm. And I grew up working on a farm. Mom and Dad had 10 children. And we had big truck patches, big gardens. We had cows, pigs, chickens, sheep, goats. We had everything you can think of. And when we weren't sleeping, we were working, doing something. And so I was anxious to get away from the farm. I hitchhiked to California when I was 16 and lived the life of a hobo for a couple of months. And I know what it's like to sleep under a bridge. I know what it's like to sleep in a boxcar and ride a boxcar from one place to another. And I know what it's like to be completely broke and not exactly know where the next meal would come from. However, I had this ingenious, brilliant plan. I could take my guitar and go into any bar anywhere in the country and set up and play a few songs and make $10 or $15, and then I'm on the road again, hitchhiking down the road. So I had that little game plan and always had a little bit of money. And I never was destitute to where I was starving or anything, but my mom worried about me a lot. And I worked a lot of different jobs, and I found about 25 or 30 things that I did never want to do for a living. I shoveled asphalt out of the back of the dump truck and put it in holes. I picked strawberries every day in a field with a bunch of Mexicans, and I slept in a tin building that didn't have any windows. It just had the sides were open at night. And I was the only white person there and the only person there that didn't speak Spanish. And every day I was picking strawberries, I was seeing the train over there, and it was going by really slow. And I saw people on that train. I thought, third day, I said, "I'm never going to pick another strawberry as long as I live." And I got my money, and I headed off. I was on the road as a traveling musician. The first job that I got in 1970, I got hired by a band in Kansas City. I went up the first week and played. At the end of the week, the guy said, "You know, we're not as good as we expected you might be, and so I'm going to have to let you go." So I got fired from my first job. Anyway, he recommended me to another guy, and I guess he liked my playing because he hired me in, and I played with that band for a couple of years. And I played professionally ever since then because I had this goal, a stupid goal that a lot of people made fun of me for whenever I was growing up. I thought that it would be great to be able to play music for a living. And my brothers and my family all told me that that was foolish and I should learn to be a mechanic or do something where I could for sure make a living. But I did very well at that. And by 1970, For the Good Times by Ray Price won a Grammy. The hottest song in the country and the number one rock and roll song was Proud Mary. It was the only thing that was above the Beatles on the charts. And so my band learned all those different songs, and I played a various lot of different places. And my life took a wrong turn down wrong road. I got saved as a boy at First Baptist Church there in Bland, was baptized, and was a born-again believer. But I wandered away from that and got going down the wrong road, as many people... Have you ever heard about anybody like that, the prodigal son? They went down the wrong road? Yeah, maybe some of you have done that. And by age 27, I was divorced twice. And I met a young lady at age 28. I was playing in a place in Minneapolis, Minnesota, so-called the Bone Shaker. It's a great big bicycle with a big wheel like that in the front and a little wheel in the back. And so we played there for a couple weeks, and after a week or so, this bartender was looking really good. And I said to her one night after the show, I said, "Hey, there's going to be a party over at my place after the show tonight. And if everybody shows up that's invited, there'll be me and you." And she fell for it. And we've been happily married for 46 years. And that's a small miracle to have a traveling musician meet a girl in a bar that's bartending, and then that marriage lasts for 46 years. And it would never have happened if we hadn't turned our lives around. I rededicated my life to Christ. Barbie got saved. And we changed our ways, and we went a new direction. I told our pastor at Cowboy Church, I said, I was going down the road of life like this. And I said, Jesus helped me to make a U-turn. And I went a new direction with a new wife and a new life. And we were, speaking of being happy, we were very happy. We had a lot of difficulties along the way. But we were very, very happy. And... we started the Kentucky Opry in 1988. I was working in Evansville at the time, selling phone book advertising. And I did a little traveling around from place to place and town to town. I would be in each town. I was here in Princeton, Katy's, and each little town in my territory of three states. And my wife and I needed a little weekend getaway. So we went to Katy's, Kentucky, at the Bed and Breakfast. And there was a little paper called the Lake Scene or something like that. It was just a little newspaper about the things going on at the lake. And in the back of it, it had a section of want ads, and there was a Quonset building for sale. And I told my wife, we'd spent a lot of time in Branson, Missouri. We'd spent a lot of time traveling. And I hadn't been playing any music except in church for the last 4 years while I was living in Evansville. And I got to missing playing music, and I had a 7-year-old son, a 3-year-old son, and one on the way. And I told Barbie, I said, it would be great to rent that concert building and start a little music show down here. And so I went to some motels and places around the lake, and I went into this one motel not far from Draftonville, and I said, how do you think a country music show would go over here, kind of like the ones they have in Branson? She said, oh, that would be absolutely great. We would have some place to send all of our guests. And I said, that'd be great. That'd be something to do because there's not much to do around here. And if you've ever been to Draftonville, 35 years ago, there was nothing to do. Shop-a-rama was it. And so I didn't need very much encouragement. We rented that place for $600 a month, and I hired a bunch of musicians from around the Paducah, Katy's, Princeton, this immediate area. And I put an ad in the Tribune Courier that said, wanted musicians and singers to start a country music show at Kentucky Lake. And a bunch of people, 8 or 10 drummers, a bunch of singers, 30 girl singers came to audition. And I hired a band and put that together. And I knew how to do that because I had been doing that for a long time. I had been playing music professionally for a long time. And I asked Barbie, I said, do you think that we should do this and go for it? And she said, well, I figured you was a good enough promoter that you could get out and get enough people in to pay the band. And I had a good job. I was making good money. And I figured, I felt the Lord was leading me in that direction. And the doors just kind of opened up for it to happen. And she said, if you want to do it, I'm for you 100%. And I'll take care of the concession. And I'll do the tickets. And you can take care of the band and plan the shows and help promote the business. So I made up little cards and I went around and gave the cards to all the motels in the area, the campgrounds, a little card very similar to the one you got in front of you there. And it told about the show. And they were the cheapest cards that I could afford. They were black ink on yellow paper. And then I would go to the motel clerks everywhere, and I would give them a couple of free passes, and I would say, hey, I'd like to have you come down and see the show on me and bring somebody with you. Come down and see the show. And I would go invite people, and that was the advertising that we did because we didn't have much money. One night, the general manager of WKYQ radio station came into the Opry. He and his wife watched the show, and he said, Mr. Campbell, you've got a great show here. How about if you and I make a little deal? I said, well, maybe. What kind of deal did you have in mind? He said, well, how about if you put a banner up there that says WKYQ Country Music Radio there on by your stage, and we give you some free advertising on the radio? I said, let me think about that a minute. I said, okay, we'll do it. And so that started a great relationship with WKYQ and Willie that's been going on for 37 years. They advertise all the concerts that we do, and we've been kind of in business partners with them on concerts for a long, long time. And so that helped the Opry get started and get off to a good start. We operated in the black, and we didn't have very many bills to pay, just the band and the rent. And I was extremely optimistic when we started this place. I was as optimistic as a man going to hunt for Moby Dick in a rowboat and taking along the tartar sauce with him. I was overly optimistic. And my wife was maybe overly conservative and cautious. And that was a good thing. At the end of the first year, I told the band that we might have to close up and start again the next May. And my wife said, well, what if we can't get the band back together? What if they get jobs, other jobs with other bands or something, and you have difficulty putting the band back together again? She said, is there any way we could stay open during the winter? Well, during October and November, our crowds was about the size of this room. 15, 20, 30 people. And I said, that ain't looking good. I said, I don't know if we can do this or not. And so I prayed about this. We thought about this. And I said, well, let's come up with a Christmas show. We'll do a Christmas show. And then after the Christmas show, we'll do a New Year's Eve show. And then we'll close up till April. We'll start again in April. I said, I think most of the guys will stay with us. And the girls. We had two girls. We had a big band. We had about a 10-piece band. And excellent show. Everybody came to the show. They raved about the show, and that was good. We had a really great product to offer them. And I think our first ticket prices that first year was $6. And so I had grown up so poor that after I got older and made a little bit of money, I've been poor and I've been broke and then had quite a bit of money, then been broke again. We went through bankruptcy and we got started again. And so I've went broke and got started again 3 or 4 different times. So at times in my life, I have felt like I've had just a ton of money. And other times I've been so broke that I couldn't pay attention. And like Oprah Winfrey said, I've been broke and I've been poor and I've been rich. And honey, rich is better. And it is. We had a little bit of money to do things, but I was still very nervous and very cautious about the opera because we didn't have a building. We didn't have any money, really. And we hit upon the idea of the Christmas show. And then the first week, we turned away more people than we could get in. We had 100 seats. And Barbie said, we're turning away 100 people a night. And what this building had, the Opry was a Quonset building, and it had a 8-foot wall that didn't support anything up there. So I went in there one day and I tore that wall down. I come to Princeton and there was an old movie theater here and I bought a bunch of seats. I bought 100 more seats and I put in those seats with a hammer drill myself. And then I paid for it at the chiropractor for the next many months. Anyway, so I thought this was going to be great. And it was. The next night for the Christmas show, we had 200 people. Well, 200 people at $6 each, that's $12. Hey, this is great. We thought, because my rent was just $600 a month. And then the landlord come in and says, what have you done to my building? What you can't just come in and tear down a wall like that. You're out of here. You're out of here. Get your stuff and get out. I said, we have a lease for another year. We have an option. He said, well, okay, but then after that year, you're out. And he said, I'm raising your rent $50 a month. I said, okay. And he said, when you get done here, you're going to build that wall back. I said, okay, we'll build the wall back. He was a little hot under the collar about it. So we were in the middle of doing the Christmas shows in December, Stephanie. And my wife said to me, honey, what are we going to do in January? I said, well, we'll close up. And she said, well, okay. Then I got together with Dr. Jeff from WKYQ. And I got together with the owner of the radio station and my band. And I said, well, now the Christmas show has been really successful. I said, back in the day when I was younger, at some of the places we would play, we would have a weekly talent contest. And then that brought in just a lot of people and a whole bunch of people who thought they could sing. I have met more people who thought they could sing than you can shake a stick at. So anyway, we started the talent show, and we sold out every night. I said, thank you, Jesus. Thank you, Jesus. We had everybody understand that the more people that they brought to cheer for them, the better chance they had of winning, because we were using an applause meter to determine the winner. For the winner, we gave away $100. It's okay. I was making $1,200 and giving away $100. So anyway, it was working really swell, I thought. And so we made it through that first January, February, March doing a talent search. And then in the summertime, we started back doing our regular Branson-type show. And then long about May or June, my wife said, what are we going to do in December? I said, well, I'll look around and find some place to rent. There weren't no place to rent. There weren't no place where you could bring a bunch of people, 200 people in, that was acceptable to the fire marshal, that where we could put people and have a show. There was not one. I reckon that I had the faith of a grain of mustard seed or something, because I believed that God would make a way, God would direct me. I figured that I was trusting God so far. I said, Lord, whatever you want to happen here is going to happen. If we can't make it happen, we'll close up. And it's been fun while it lasted. So Barbie said one morning at church, she said, you know, maybe we could buy a little house with a couple of acres of land or something like that, a little bit of land. Maybe we could buy something and build an Opry on that. I said, okay. We were driving after church down Highway 641 from Draffenville towards Kentucky Dam, and there was a realtor out there, blonde head lady, cute like you. She had dimples. She had a dress on. She obviously had been to church, and she had a for sale sign, and the poor woman was out there with her high heel shoes trying to stump the for sale sign in the ground. I whipped the U really quick, went back up the road, pulled in there, and I said, ma'am, how much they want for this place? She said, $35,000. I said, oh, really? Well, does it have any land with it? She said, 2.5 acres. I said, that's enough. I'll give you $33,000 for it and $500 down payment right now. She said, I think they'll take it. She said, I'll let you know tomorrow. They came back and she said, it's yours. I said, okay, that's one. Okay. That's one little thing off the list there. And besides that, we had nothing. I had maybe saved a little bit of money. We had about $10,000. I had some money that my mom gave me from when she passed from her estate. And I went to the bank again. I went, paid, got that house. Went coming back just a little bit later, asking for another loan to build an Opry building. And the banker looked at me and he said, well, Mr. Campbell, the last three people that were here with the music show, they all left town owing the bank money. You ever heard of Cane Tech territory? Well, it was a fiasco as far as the bank goes. Anyway, so other people, there was a big barn in Aurora and another music show. All had went belly up bankrupt and left town owing. So musicians wanting to start up a music show didn't have a very good reputation. And so I convinced them to give me a loan. And they said, okay, you got to put in the first $30,000. You build a parking lot and you build the concrete slab, and you put your money into it first. And then we will lend you the rest. I said, okay. Well, I had $10,000, had about $6,000 my mom gave me. I had a new Cadillac that was paid for. I went to the bank, and I hocked that Cadillac. And got some money for that. And I went into the bank. I needed $30,000. And I said to the bank, okay, I've got $25,000 here. That's all I got. I said, if that's not enough, then we won't have no Kentucky Opry here. And so he said, just a minute. He grabs his papers and was gone for 5 minutes. He comes back and he said, Mr. Campbell, you got yourself an Opry. So he said, you put that first $25,000 in yourself, we'll give you the rest of the money. So that's how the Kentucky Opry building in its present form got started. We started there. We had our first opening night, December the 31st, 1989. And when we was in the Quonset building, I asked my comedian, Scotty Henson, and I said, how many seats do you think we'll need in the new building? He said, how many seats do you have in this one? I said, 200. I said, but we turn people away sometimes. And he said, well, I think 300 seats would be Lord of Plenty. So I said, okay. So we went and got some more seats. We went up to Evansville and found another theater someplace. I don't remember where, and got another 100 seats. We put in more seats. This time, I hired people to do the hammer drill. We got that all put in. And then the Friday before the Saturday night show on New Year's Eve, my wife come to me and she said, oh, honey, listen to me. We got a problem. We got a really bad problem. I said, what it is? And she said, I don't know what I'm going to do. She was in tears. And I said, what? She said, I got to figuring it up. We had no computers back then. We did everything by hand, all the reservations and everything. She said, I got to counting my reservations. And she said, I've sold 600 seats. I said, Lord Jesus. So I went to the high school and I borrowed 200 folding chairs, and the other 100 people stood up for the first night. And we had a fresh made parking lot by Ray Pat English. And he came to me and he said, now, you know, this is a fresh parking lot. And he said, we've had a lot of rain. And he said, some people might get stuck. He said, I'll come bring my backhoe and I'll make sure anybody that's stuck, we'll dig them out. Well, we had about 12 people stuck that we had to dig out. And so it was a very humble beginning. It was an amazing miracle to me, one thing after another, after another, after another. And basically, we started the Kentucky Opry with $10,000. A one-month-old, a three-year-old, seven-year-old, and $10,000, and a prayer to God that it would work. And in 1990, we built that new building. And starting January will be our 38th season. In 2000, I started teaching young people about music. I had a lot of contestants that needed coaching. And so I started doing coaching again, and I started teaching violin and guitar and mandolin, and a lot of my students have gone on to become famous now and play music for a living, and that's a very rewarding thing. I saw a sign once on a poster that said, it said, 100 years from now, no one will remember what kind of house you lived in and what kind of car you drove, but they will remember if you made the difference in the life of a child. Mm-hmm. It's one thing great about Rotary, helping young people, that I'm sympathetic to your cause and helping them with scholarships and helping them learn to make a speech. And so I've been doing that. It's been very rewarding. I still do that. I teach about 12 or 13 kids a week. In 2010, I always had guests. Boo asked me about my guests. And she said, who have you liked the most? And I said, well, Merle Haggard was really cool. When he walked in the back of the Opry booth, he walked into my dressing room, and he stuck out his hand, and he said, hello, I'm Merle Haggard. And I said, yes, Mr. Haggard, we know who you are. I said, I'm Clay Campbell. He said, I know who you are, too, because you signed the contract, buddy. He said, you're the one paying me. And I said, yep, I'm the one paying you. And so what I do now a lot is I book a lot of big stars, and I sign the contracts, and I pay them. And I got people to do everything else. A guy walked into my venue there, and his name was Reggie LeFay. He's a famous saxophone player, played in Vegas for a number of years, and he lived in Paducah. He came in carrying his saxophone case, and he looked around in my opera, and he said, hey, you ever have Cowboy Church in here? And I said, what's Cowboy Church? He said, what's Cowboy Church? He said, there's Cowboy Churches all over. There's a big one in Branson. There's a big one in Pigeon Forge. There's one in Nashville. And they got a great band, and they have good preaching, and they got good country music, country gospel music. He said, they're great. He said, I play at those places all the time. I said, well, what do you know about that? Someone told my wife it's a great idea that we start a Cowboy Church there. And she said, that ain't going to work. I said, why not? She said, well, if you're preaching, I ain't coming. And she said, where are you going to find a cowboy preacher? If you can't find no cowboy preacher, you can't have no cowboy church. You can't just put somebody up there that puts on a hat and boots and tell them that they're a cowboy preacher. She said, that will not work. And I sent out a few emails, and one lady sent me back an email, and she said, Chris Clark lives up in Salem, and he's a cowboy preacher. We got in contact with him and come to meet several times with some other cowboy preachers, and we started the cowboy church in the second week of June 2010 with four, count them, 1, 2, 3, 4 cowboy preachers. About a month before we were supposed to have our first service, my wife was sitting there in the chair having coffee. I was having coffee. And she said, well, the other problem that we had was the fact that the Opry was a big mess on Saturday night. And Barbie said, well, the reason that it's not going to work is you're not going to be able to get an employee to come in here after the show at 11 or 12 o'clock at night, or get here at 5 a.m. and clean the place up. She said it would be extremely difficult to find somebody to do that. And I said, well, we'll figure it out. God will provide a way. So that morning we were sitting there and she said, you know, I was thinking, we've got 4 concession people, a couple technicians. If everybody was to pitch in on Saturday night after the show, we could pay them for an extra hour work. And then in about 30 or 45 minutes, I believe we could get, we also had 2 car parkers. I believe we could get everything out, cleaned up, the trash taken out, and get the floors cleaned up, because a lot of people would spill things, you know, and a lot of people would make a big mess in the bathroom. And so we come up on that idea, and I have a meeting with all of them. So get around. I said, have any of y'all ever seen a NASCAR race? Everybody said, yeah. Okay, they've seen the NASCAR race. Okay, what happens is when the car comes into a pit stop, there's about 6 people. And each one of them, one guy does the wheels really quick, and another guy puts the wheels on, and another guy fills up the gas, and another one real quick cleans the windshield, and another one does something else. And in about 20 seconds, that car takes off. So we're going to assign each one of you a job. You do that job as quickly as you can and get things wrapped up and get your job done. And then if you're done, you can help somebody else. They had the whole Opry cleaned up in about 25 minutes. So we solved that problem. And God's blessed us so much. I'm very thankful for Cowboy Church. We just celebrated 15 years. And we've been averaging about 100. Last week we had 115, and we had a couple families missing, about 12 or 15 people missing. And we generally have 8 or 10 visitors a week. And so it's been a wonderful, wonderful. We started it out as a mission, but it's turned into a really wonderful little church. And the people there, they love it. And I believe that's being blessed by the Lord. And that's my story, and I'm sticking to it. And I would like to take a moment or two for some questions. I'm sure we have a question or two.
I'm wondering how COVID, did you think you were going to make it through COVID?
No, we did not. We thought we were going to all die. And we were closed up. The church was closed up. And we tried to open back up and do some shows with the people spaced apart, you know. And the maximum people that we could get in our 550-seat theater, the maximum people we could get was about 80. So we would have 2 people here and then a couple people over there and way over there more people and 4 people over there. And it was horrible. And we lost money on every show. So we did that a few times and I said, okay, we're quitting that. So the band, my great band, I let the band go. And we struggled through COVID. I got COVID that first year in August of that, before the vaccination came out. And I had a temperature of 101, 102 for 18 days. And then it was a couple months before I could get back to my normal routine. So I told my sister, she was a nurse in California at San Diego. I said, I had a really bad case of that COVID. She said, no, you didn't, you dummy. I said, I did too. I had it terrible. She said, no, you were not in a hospital on a ventilator. Those people had it bad. So we lost a lot of great customers because our clientele is elderly. And we, long about that second year, we applied for a grant for closed venues, a shuttered venue grant. And we got our grant because the year before we had a 91% loss of income compared to the year before to this year. So we got a grant. And I paid the band for the year that we were off and told them that we weren't going to have the band anymore. And nowadays we do maybe 3 or 4 shows a year. We do some Christmas shows. Boo likes the Christmas shows. So that's the COVID question and answer. Anything else?
I have 2 questions.
2 questions.
Okay. Well, First question.
Listen, I got 2 minutes.
Listen, it's okay. We have a minute of question. Okay. This list on the back, is this upcoming or is this who has been there?
Well, we book a lot of people over again.
Okay. Okay.
If they come and they sell well, they have a good crowd. We've had Gene Watson 15 times.
Oh, okay. More specifically, I see Shenandoah on this list.
Mm-hmm.
Are they coming
We've had
back?
Shenandoah 5 or 6 times, yeah.
Are they coming back?
They usually do, but they usually want more money. And I refuse to pay it.
Love it.
After
question.
COVID, all the groups wanted more money. I booked in Travis Tritt for $45,000. After COVID, he wants $100,000. I booked Trace Atkins for $50,000, and now he wants $150,000. After COVID, everything changed for those bands,
yeah.
And everybody, all the 90s acts have all hiked up their fee because 90s country is really, really hot right now.
Yeah. Second question. Have you ever met or talked to Dolly through your Kentucky operation? Like ever. Anytime.
Well, I met Dolly Parton
uh-huh.
before she had big boobs.
Well.
Okay. I saw her on the Porter Wagoner show, and she looked like a 12-year-old girl, you know,
oh, yeah.
Just kind of flat-chested, and
sure.
but she really sang good, and this was when the Porter Wagoner show was in black and white,
uh-huh.
And she was just an extraordinary little person and just about as friendly and perky of a person that you would ever want to meet. She's an angel of a lady, does a lot of great work. Hey, thank you for your time today. Thank you for asking me, and God bless each one of you.